During the first hour of the show, we have a little change of plans. We will be talking with a couple of people from WILL-TV. In fact, the managers from WILL-TV, Carl Caldwell, who is the station manager. He's the guy. He's the guy at whose desk the buck stops, so to speak.
Yes, that's and I'm finding that to be the case, Jack, but it's things are going very well, thank you.
Good. And also David Teal, he's the program director, the man who makes the decisions on the programs that are aired on WILL-TV. And the point of this is to provide them to answer any questions you have about the way we do things around here, whether it be programming or the way the station is run, the financial aspects of WILL-TV. All those are fair game for your questions. And the number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us around Illinois, Indiana, etc., 800-222-9455. Those numbers again around Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Elsewhere, 800-222-WILL. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Very nice unison answer there.
Well, you know, we're in lockstep here.
That's right. Okay, well, I'm sure we'll get lots of calls. We have somebody calling right away, but what's new? Anything exciting going on?
Well, a lot of things exciting, Jack, but I'm reminded with Carl Castle's report of a time I was over at Greg Hall, WILL Radio, and Alex Ashlock, former news director, former program director for WILL AM, threw the microphone to me. We were in different locations. It was during a pledge drive, and he introduced me as Carl Castle. And I thought to myself, now, did they fly in Carl Castle to help with this pledge? I didn't know whether to respond or not. But finally, I think he caught it. I'm reminded of that story whenever I hear Carl Castle. But things are going very well.
Yeah.
We are in a position right now where we're excited about some fall initiatives in terms of programming. Of course, David is here to talk about that. We have this digital conversion that we keep working on and trying to make all the pieces fit in a timetable that is appropriate and a timetable that is really, in a very real sense, required of us.
Mm-hmm.
And also some local production initiatives, some interesting documentary work going on. And some other things in local production, Jack, that will make the future look pretty exciting.
Well, that's great. You mentioned digital conversion. We had a Carl conversion over the year. You moved from being involved in production to being actual station manager. And,
yes.
It's pretty exciting.
Well, it is. It's very exciting. I kiddingly tell people the novelty wore off in about the middle of the second day. But in all honesty, it's great to work with people like David, like Henry Sujewski in local production, all kinds of people on the television side. And then, of course, Jack, the opportunity to work closely with people like Dan Simeone up here in radio, Jay Pierce, Jack Brighton. It's a great staff. It makes the job an easy one. There are some challenges that we face, but overall the transition has been a good one. It's great at my age to still be learning things.
You're a young man.
Oh, yes.
Well, you mentioned a number of things, among them local production, which is something that I care a great deal about. I know that television isn't as glamorous as radio, but just kidding. We have to do this little rivalry, pretense. But where does local production fit in what WILL-TV does, and how do you view its importance?
Well, and of course, I'm sure that David will want to respond to this question as well, but local production is incredibly important. It reflects how we respond to people in our particular viewing area. It would be easy, I guess, to be a repeater station and simply air those programs that either PBS or APT or CEN provide us, but I think, as you well know, Jack, you and I have talked about the importance of local production, local programming, and the need to meet the requirements of and the aspirations, the desires, the needs of people in our viewing area. That's what local production is all about. We continue to focus on documentaries that, of course, can be targeted for national distribution, but at the same time, some local programs that I think are really important to the people who live here, and that will continue to be a focus. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, and I would certainly, you know, I hope to see us in the next year or so get, you know, full-time back into public affairs, and we had kind of gotten a little bit out of that. We still do some, but not as much as we used to, and I think we've been talking about this, Carl, and with others at the station, and hope to get back into that full-time with a regular weekly presence.
That's right. It's an important thing to do. We did it for many years, as you know, Talking Point, with David Inge and other hosts. Mm-hmm. We did a series of election programs last fall. But the hiring of former WCIA TV reporter and news director John Paul, I think, puts us in a position to really have an on-air public affairs presence, a weekly presence that it really opens up some doors for us with John's journalistic background and reporting background. So that opens up something that maybe we can talk about later in the hour.
Yeah. Well, I'm just really curious about the possibility for actually doing some news on television, since it seems to be a common complaint that news is kind of disappearing from the TV realm. And I mean, granted, there are commercial stations that have significant news operations, but I guess a lot of people feel, I'm hearing, I don't think I'm just speaking for myself, that news on the commercial stations has kind of gone downhill in recent years. And there might be an opportunity for public broadcasting to step in and actually do some local news. Is there any thought to doing something like that?
Well, as you know, Jack, news, the production of local news on a nightly basis is very expensive. Mm-hmm. And as a result, in this market anyway, WILL-TV has focused more on the hour-long, perhaps, or even 30-minute public affairs talk show. This is I guess I look to the Election 2000 programs as an example of what we can do that commercial stations can't in terms of public affairs programming, and that's bringing in political candidates and being able to do live, studio-based, live audience kinds of productions. In terms of a nightly news presence, I will tell you one thing. I don't anticipate that we will be doing extended local news, but we're talking about an interesting concept anyway, and that involves the insertion of live weather updates during the course of our primetime schedule from 7 to 10. And of course, in instances where there is severe weather, it would provide us with a great opportunity to provide live inserts with weather updates. I think this is something that would help increase our audience. I think we have a problem in terms of weather programming right now on the TV side. When severe weather hits our area, I think people have a tendency to switch to someone else, another station that has a weather presence. I would like to see us in a position with Ed Kieser and with Mike Sola and other members of the staff here be in a position where people in prime time turn to us for television weather information. So I think in a roundabout way of responding to your question, that's one thing that we're thinking about right now.
We certainly have a lot of resources in the building here in Campbell Hall. And I know that one of the big topics has been how to share those resources between radio and television more effectively.
As I look at you across the table here, Jack, I think about the conversations we've had of late about the internet and the way that that radio and TV can kind of come together and work on developing our web presence. But I also see great opportunities in terms of cooperation between radio and TV. We talk about it quite a bit, but as you know, we get into our separate things, and despite the fact that we're in the same building here, we tend to say, good morning, Jack, good morning, Carl, and we go our separate ways. But the potential is there to really have some meaningful interaction between the radio staff and the TV staff, and I know that we will continue to look at ways that we can cooperate, not only in terms of public affairs programming, but in terms of our web presence and local programming. I think of David Inge, too, and the role he has played, for example, in Vietnam soldier stories, a very key role in that. We need to do more of that here at WILL.
We're talking this morning with Carl Caldwell and David Teal. They are respectively the station manager and program director at WILL-TV. And this is your chance to ask any questions. We're holding their feet to the fire. for your calls this morning.
Ouch. Ouch.
Yes. And any questions about the decisions that are made about programs, the schedule, anything about the operation of WILL-TV, those questions are welcome. 333-9455, that's the Champaign-Urbana number. Toll-free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. Let me ask David Teal to talk a little bit about what he does and the kinds of decisions that are made about national programming and local programming, et cetera. And there are a variety of things that you can say. Feel free to interpret my question any way you want, basically, which is what people do anyway. But I'm curious about, you know, how you go about deciding what to air from the national services, of which there are several, and I'm not sure I even understand what all those sources are.
Yeah, and I think that's something that a lot of folks don't understand, that PBS, you know, we are a member of PBS. PBS is a provider of programming and some supplemental services for public television stations, but we are not a network, say like a CBS station, like WCIA here in town. Is a CBS affiliate. We're not really, it's not the same kind of relationship. PBS is one program provider. There's a outfit called the Central Educational Network. They are also a program provider. American Public Television is a program provider. And there are other places we get programming. But PBS, of course, is the one that most people know. And it does supply the bulk of probably our highest profile shows. And what we get every month, we'll get a schedule from PBS, so kind of their recommended national schedule, and they'll program, you know, 6 nights a week. They leave Saturday alone, but we will get that schedule, and then we're not necessarily held to run those programs at those times. I think that's something that a lot of folks don't understand either. They'll see an article that says, you know, such and so, you know, Nova will be seen, you know, this Tuesday night at 8:00. Well, you know, maybe we will, maybe we won't. I try to stick fairly closely to the national schedule because it confuses people who've seen those articles or that promotion, the national promotion. And because in general, PBS makes a lot of good choices. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, there are times where we have things that, you know, we want to put in from either our local programming, our local production unit, sometimes things that come in from some of these other suppliers, you know, shows that would not be distributed by PBS. And so, you know, we jockey the schedule around a bit. We also like to put in some things that people enjoy, like some of the British comedies, you know, that show up on Saturday. Those are things that we do on our own. They don't come from PBS. We go out and purchase those programs.
Mm-hmm. How many other providers are there?
There's probably about a half a dozen major players,
yeah,
in this. And then, we can get, if there is a local producer who has put together, you know, a decent program, a half hour show or an hour show, I mean, we've aired some of those too. And, you know, we've gotten some things from local and regional program producers. And, you know, so there's a lot of different ways that things can make their way to WILL-TV.
What are some of the exciting things coming up?
Well, I just got back from the PBS annual meeting, which was in Philadelphia this year, and this is the time when the representatives of the 347 member stations will go and meet with PBS officials and we'll kind of talk about the plans for the next year. And and sometimes we get along and sometimes we don't. It's a complex relationship because of the fact that, you know, we unlike the commercial affiliates, we pay PBS for the programming. It works the other way around in the commercial world. So it's a somewhat different relationship. There was a lot of talk this year about some changes to the schedule that they want to do in the fall, that PBS wants to do. We've got a new or a relatively new PBS president named Pat Mitchell, and she comes from a production background, which is different than past PBS presidents. And she wants to shake things up a bit, and I think it is time, you know, for things to be shaken a bit. We, I think, as a system, have become a bit complacent. Things have been in the schedule at the same time for, you know, the last 20 years, which in one sense, you know, there's a certain, you know, you've got a familiarity with that. But on the other hand, we haven't necessarily responded to changes in the media landscape. So A couple of things, you know, will be happening in the fall. Some established series will be changing nights, and there will be some new series added to the schedule. So that's we can talk about that in more detail if you want.
Yeah, I'm really curious about what's going on in the PBS system. We have seen in the last 20 years or so a pretty steep decline in viewership in general for PBS, and perhaps for all individual networks and channels.
Yeah, it applies to commercial operations
as the market has sort of fragmented. You know, and in one sense, you can say, yeah, PBS hasn't responded to the new media landscape. On the other hand, what do you do? Put on some kind of survivor program to drive ratings up? I mean, what is the thinking about the fragmentation of the audience and how public broadcasting on television needs to respond?
Yeah, I mean, well, the fragmentation is a given. I mean, there are what we in the public television community like to call the lookalike channels, you know, the A&Es and the Bravos and the Discoveries. They are cable services who have, for one reason or another, kind of decided to take over what used to be you know, exclusively public television genres of programming: nature programming, science programming, some arts and things. Now, I would argue, of course, that I feel that public television still does most of those genres better. But you know, certainly the Discoveries of the world have a lot of money for promotion, and so what a lot of the research has found is that. That in some ways, you know, the Discoveries of the world are supplanting in people's minds that they are the primary source of that kind of programming, and so people do respond to the promotion, but those figures aren't necessarily the amount that the audience says that, you know, they're watching Discovery, for instance, isn't necessarily borne out by the actual ratings data that the AC Nielsen company provides. So, you know, that's a challenge. I think a lot of the problem that we've had in the last few years has probably been more of an image problem than a programming problem. But I think we also need to respond by making some changes. They're introducing some new programs. Pat Mitchell is very interested in public affairs programming. And one of the things that it will not be on in the fall, but for I think the spring of next year, is something called Public Square, which they see now as a 90-minute public affairs program in prime time that they're looking to try to reinvent public affairs genre to make it something more accessible, more interesting, you know, something that, but not, I mean, not to trick it up, I mean, not to make it, it's not going to be, you know, the survivor of public affairs, but to make something that is not, you know, simply a bunch of people sitting around talking, you know, and what we like to call talking head programming.
You know, we were talking about this just last week, Jack, this question of viewership and membership, with our community advisory committee, Dan Simeone, myself, Don Mullally, Debbie Day, talking about some of the frustrations related to programming. I mean, do you put together a program that you think has little value and you attract a pretty good audience with it? Or do you do what you consider to be, from a production and content standpoint, a great program that no one watches? And it's a very difficult question to answer. Obviously, we want to increase viewership. Obviously, we want to attract new members. In other words, those viewers that actually contribute to our programming service. But that dilemma of a great program with a small number of viewers or a lousy program that might attract a greater number of viewers, which way do you go? I am still of the opinion I would rather see some quality programs that perhaps don't attract a huge audience, but we need to be sensitive to the fact that we need to not only reach our core audience, but broaden our overall audience base. And we need to be sensitive to that because of the importance that the increasing importance of member dollars to program acquisitions. That percentage keeps going up and up.
Yeah. Well, and there was a lot of talk, too, at the PBS meeting that they felt, I mean, I think we all see that dilemma that Carl's just been describing here, but I think what they're hoping to do is to try to find some kind of middle ground that you can have programming that can have a mass appeal and yet not lose the editorial content, the high quality of editorial content that we've seen with other with past PBS programming. So I think that's what they're looking to do with Public Square and some of the, these other things that they're going to be introducing.
And Masterpiece
over the next year.
Theater. A Sunday night staple, is, yes. The suggestion is that it be moved this fall.
That's indeed. That's one of the changes that they are planning to put into motion at this point, that starting in October, Masterpiece Theater would move to Monday nights. And the reason for that is really, again, because of the competition in the media landscape, that there's a lot of drama programming on Sunday night that appeals to more or less the same audience. And so Masterpiece Theater is not as highly viewed as it used to be. And so, it has stayed on Sunday night mostly out of inertia. And it's been, I think, on Sunday night since the beginning. So, well over 20 years that this program has not moved. And I know that some people out there may be saying, good, I like it on Sunday night. I don't want it to move. But on the other hand, other broadcasters do change their schedule from time to time because audiences shift around, new competition starts. And unfortunately, we have not been very flexible as a system for a variety of reasons, some of which I think are political in nature. I mean, politics between producing stations like WGBH in Boston and politics between underwriters and other things. So there's a lot of forces at work that have kind of kept things where they are for a very long time. And so Masterpiece Theater is one of the things that, in October we'll be moving to Monday night. They did a pilot schedule with some stations. They changed some things around on 7 pilot stations last year, and they found that Masterpiece Theater worked a little better from an audience standpoint on Monday night. So that's why it's going there.
We're almost at our midpoint here with Carl Caldwell, station manager, and David Teal, program director at WILL-TV. We're welcoming your questions about programming or the way the station is run. If you're a WILL-TV viewer and you have questions, or simply a PBS viewer and have questions about anything in that universe, you're welcome to give us a call. Excuse me. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-WILL.
Now, I expect a good grilling here. I usually, when we've done Ask the Managers on television, we get peppered with questions about, when are you going to bring back such and so?
95% of the questions. when we used to do a program called Ask the Managers on TV, it was usually the fifth Thursday of the month.
Yeah.
We always insisted that David Teal be with us because, as I said, 95% of the questions relate specifically to programs,
right. The
availability of program scheduling, that kind of thing. So David is in the hot seat right now, and I'll just kind of sit next to him. And
I used to call the program Ask Dave, so that, but yeah, yeah so please. Yeah, I'm feeling a little lonely here.
You mentioned, David, a little while ago that the normal network station affiliate relationship has the network paying the local affiliate. With us, it's the reverse.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to put a fine point on that. How much do we pay PBS?
It is in the vicinity of, I think, about $400,000. I'd have to get – I don't have the figures with me. It varies a bit from year to year. It's dependent on some kind of – on the amount that we get from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and as different factors can make it vary a bit. I know that for this next year that PBS is requesting a 5% increase in what they call their assessment for what they call the National Program Service.
Yeah, so am I. I'm requesting that too.
Which always puts a little pressure on the programs that don't come from PBS. We have my budget goes up a little every year, but it gets harder to buy those other programs, the British Comedies and the Ballykiss Angels and the other things. Some things have been kind of squeezed out because even though we spent more money on programming, more of it has to go to PBS to support a good national service.
I for any listeners, Jack, WILL AM and FM, I'm sure you've heard appeals from Dan Simeone about the end of our fiscal year coming up. I'm not going to make a pitch right now, but I do want to point out the fact that David and I And a number of us, including Dan with the managers in radio, are getting together to talk about preliminary budget numbers. And it's very difficult at this point, before the end of the fiscal year, to know exactly what the revenue numbers are and come up with a meaningful budget. Mm-hmm. But those preliminary discussions, I think, will enable us to identify certain goals and objectives, even in the area, David, of local programming, that we simply can't answer right now, mm-hmm. Jack,
right.
because
mm-hmm.
We don't know the numbers. But we continue to talk. We continue to turn to viewers and listeners, as you well know, to assist us in coming up with what is the most important source of revenue, and that's the viewers and listeners that call up and make those pledges or send in those checks, as you well know. But yeah. No pitch right yeah. now.
Well, as you say, you're not making an appeal for listener contributions right now. But if you were, you would probably point out that right now would be a really key time for people to make a contribution.
WILL-TV is about $80,000 away from where it needs to be by June 30th. In order to come up with the programs that we'd really like to provide to viewers in Central Illinois. I guess that was kind of a pitch, wasn't it?
Well, I think actually it was, but that's okay.
Well, thanks. Thanks for the opportunity.
Sure. We have a call to talk with. Let's include them in our conversation. This is a listener in Decatur on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yeah, I have a very simple question. I was wondering how long you're going to continue to carry what I consider one of the most obnoxious talking head programs that there is, namely the McLaughlin Group.
Go
ahead,
David. Oh, okay. Well, no, I can certainly understand that viewpoint. Sometimes get, I guess, what I would consider a bit strident. We don't have any plans to drop it. I mean, it still gets a good viewership. It's not something that we have to pay extra money for. So I think we would make even more people angry if we were to drop the program.
That's hard to plan.
But you know, certainly, you know, there hasn't been a great public outcry to say, you know, get rid of that John McLaughlin. So right now, I expect it would be with us for at least in the indefinite future. But you know, things always change.
I think it deserves to be on something like the Fox Network, Murdoch's Network, which is obviously politically slanted. And besides the slant, which is, you know, the result of the moderator, if nothing else, mm-hmm. I cannot stand the way these people are constantly talking all at the same time, interrupting one another.
Is it the for the person calling in from Decatur, and we appreciate your feedback on this, is it the format that bothers you? Is it the content, the personalities of the individuals involved? This is, you know, I compare it sometimes to talk radio in certain markets that try and do nothing more than make people angry. They're baiting you to either agree wholeheartedly or get upset, as apparently you do. Is it the content or the format that bothers you?
Well, the personalities in the sense that they're interrupting one another all the time.
Yes.
And, the political slant, that bothers me to some extent. I'm not real liberal, but I'm more liberal than conservative. And the fact that McLaughlin runs the show, and he'll even interrupt people who are making a point. You know, if they don't get to the point instantly, he wants to interrupt them. I guess McLaughlin is the most obnoxious of all.
Well, I'm sure you're not alone in that.
Elizabeth Clift continues to be on it. She's constantly being browbeaten by
yeah.
the others.
And she's—I give her props because she's stuck it out. Actually, Jack German left the show a while back. He was the other kind of—I don't know if you'd call him the token liberal, but certainly, but probably, you know, one of the more outspoken liberal voices on the program. And he left the show a while back, but Eleanor has stuck it out, and I think I'm sure she brings at least some balance to the program. But I think you're absolutely right that, you know, having a strong personality like McLaughlin running the program. He gets to set the tone of the debate, but at least, you know, I appreciate at least as a viewer that he allows other voices to occasionally be heard, even though he interrupts them.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. You know, this brings to mind the fact too, Jack, that one of the big concerns of WILL-TV and other public television stations, and I think David will agree, is our need to broaden our audience base to include more younger people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've had an opportunity to talk to a couple of groups recently, young people, high school age students, and I asked them, how many of you have watched WILL TV at least once in the last week? And I get very little response. Mm-hmm. And system-wide, there is a concern about trying to target young people who, for a number of reasons, don't tune in to their public television station. I think an effort to try to remedy that, American High, which has aired in recent months. But that's really a challenge facing all PBS stations, all public stations, is the need to provide programming mm-hmm. that includes, attracts, interests young people.
Well, you mentioned American High, and then we'll get on to some more callers here since our lines are filling up. But this is a show that actually aired previously on
Fox. For about 2 weeks.
Yeah,
maybe
they
three.
They pulled the plug because they didn't like the audience numbers or something.
They didn't like the audience numbers. When I saw that series premiering on Fox, I said, you know, this is something that ought to be on public television. Yeah. I mean, even though it was not something that would be a traditional public television program, but to me, I saw it as, you know, here is a documentary series that's providing a real slice of life of what kids are really going through right now. And, you know, and not all of it is something that you can be comfortable with. You look at it sometimes and you go, oh, man, these kids are some of these kids, you know, just seem like they're just so angry and maybe not the best examples. But they're not really set out to be examples. They're set out to be kids. This is what at least some real kids are going through. Yeah. And so I thought, you know, it was a good thing that we were able to bring it on. We haven't had a lot of viewership for it. We haven't had a lot of response for it. But, I mean, I hope that it's something that, you know, we can do to provide a little variety to the service. You know, we're not going to chase younger viewers to the detriment of our older audience that you know comes to public television. But I think we need to just open up the tent a bit.
Sure. Well, when is American High?
American High airs on Wednesdays at 9 p.m.
Okay. So, yeah. It's a good show, and I just wanted to mention that because if people haven't had a chance to look at that, it's an example of the kind of thing that, like you say, you know, it should have been done by public broadcasting. The fact that Fox started it and we were lucky to, you know.
I'm glad we jumped in. We've got another one, actually. I just want to quickly say, starting up in January, a series that was originally developed for CBS but is now going to be produced by PBS. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and PBS are putting up the money for something called American Family, which will be the first first drama with a Latino cast ever on broadcast television. And so when we'll be doing that in January. It looks great. It's got Edward James Olmos and Raquel Welch and Sonia Braga in it. And we saw some clips from it in Philadelphia. So it looks good.
Great. A couple other callers waiting. Let's get right on next to a listener in Urbana on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. I'm a regular listener of WLAM FM, and I also watch TV. I have this general question. So do you guys get ratings, AC Nielsen's ratings that you were talking about? Do you get the numbers just like every other channel does?
Yes.
And so, I mean, what is the... I'm just curious to know what's the kind of ratings that we get. How many million households watch?
Well, I unfortunately can't say millions.
maybe nationwide we can say millions. But
no, I mean we're probably more talking tens of thousands for in general. We just got the May book. There are several sweeps periods throughout the year, and we just got the May book in actually last week, and I haven't had a chance to really go over it yet. I just got back. But, you know, a typical show, I don't know, a typical show probably get, maybe somewhere in the vicinity of, 3 to 10,000 viewers at a given time. But of course, you have to take the Nielsen stuff with a grain of salt because the data is not necessarily, some of it's a little suspect at times.
For the caller, and of course, David can talk about this as well, but he and I have talked about ratings. We are in a diary market where viewers are asked to actually document when they watch television in a handwritten diary. And there are larger markets that are hardwired markets that I think there's general agreement, David, that that system is a bit more accurate in terms of the numbers. But the audience ratings are very important. It relates to that point we were making earlier about what programs do we air? Do we air those that are going to attract a huge audience that we don't think are very good, or or go the other way? But we're sensitive.
All of our programs are very good.
All of that's right. All of them are very good, but at the expense maybe of putting on a program that is not very good in an effort to get a big audience. That's the point I'm making. But we do look very closely not only at the primetime ratings from Nielsen, but also, since we're on 24 hours a day, at the ratings during the course of the day and on weekend days. So your question is a good one, and it's something we kind of keep pretty close tabs on.
I also have another query to make in terms of the cost of producing programs for both radio and television. We have other corporate stations that have a large amount of money at their disposal, and so they can afford to like spend a lot of money trying to produce, I mean, supposedly better programs. What I'm wondering is, we have a loose network of public stations all around the country, and I'm wondering if there is a much tighter collaboration in terms of financial support and program sharing between public radio and TV stations can help in improving the quality and the viewership, and I mean we basically improve the amount of resources we have at your disposal.
Well, I mean, we already have a lot of that going on. I mean, that almost everything that we air is produced by some public television station, or at least produced or presented by them through an independent producer, or coming from an independent producer and presented by another public television station. So, I mean, there's an awful lot of program sharing that goes on, and we've shared our programs, some of them, with the network. Well, not the network, but I mean with the community of other public television stations.
Well, I always refer to the fact that we produce documentaries that have received national distribution, but among the stations in Illinois, we do try to stay in constant touch about the sharing of programs. And in terms of public affairs, and my background before getting into this new position last November was in the production of public affairs programming, for example, the Election 2000 series. We had great cooperation among stations like WILL-TV, WTVP-TV in Peoria, WSIU in Carbondale, and a sharing of those production costs. So we weren't duplicating effort because, as you know, Jack, our congressional districts here are quite large. And it only made sense for us to pool our resources with other public stations. And your point is a good one. We need to encourage and continue to look for ways in which we can cooperate with other stations.
One last question before I hang up. This is in response to a discussion going on earlier about attracting younger audiences. If the younger audiences don't see are not exposed to material that publicizes WILL or public radio or TV, they are not going to even watch this thing. I mean, if their parents don't watch, the kids don't watch, and if they don't see any stuff that advertises public radio, they're not going to go into tune in. Because I have never seen any advertisements or any material that publicizes public radio in any of the teen magazines, for example. I'm just wondering, wouldn't that be a better way of trying to attract younger audiences? I mean, we have these billboards in Champaign-Urbana that looks really nice. I mean, I really appreciate those ads. So they look very cool. We had one-page advertisements like that in maybe one teen magazine or something. That might draw us a bigger audience than, I don't know.
Well,
just a thought.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, I mean, that's a big issue, even at this conference I was talking about. The question is always, you know, do we spend more money on programming or do we spend more money on promotion? And that's what, you know, Discovery Channel and some others have over us, is they have huge promotion budgets. And we can't match that. You did see it. You may not have seen it, but with American High, PBS did do a lot of what you're describing. Tried to do viral web marketing and ads in teen magazines and things like that. So they did try to do it for that specific program. But the honest truth is we don't have as much money for promotion either at the local or national level, and yeah, it would be nice because you're absolutely right. If nobody knows, you know, if they're not already watching us and they don't see the on-air promotion, it's tough.
You know, we've had a couple of programs that I'd like to mention, a day in our hometown for both Decatur and Bloomington Normal. One of the great things about these programs, in addition to the fact that they consist of stories that are actually videotaped, documented by residents who live in these communities, one of the great things about that is the fact that you get built-in on-air promotion because during the production of, for example, a day in our hometown, Bloomington Normal, the daily, I should say, the Pantograph newspaper in Bloomington Normal wrote a number of stories talking about the production of this program. We received in Decatur some great exposure, promotion from radio stations. And it's a great way to self-promote, to outreach to people in these communities with these programs, but also to have that built-in promotion. And locally, Jack and David, as you know, we are constantly talking about the importance of promoting programs. I mean, if you have a great program and no one knows it's on, why produce the program? So this question of production costs versus promotion costs is an ongoing one, and you need, and I think you'd agree, David, we need to promote programs as much as we possibly can with a very limited budget.
Yeah.
We have another caller waiting, and maybe about 6 or 7 minutes left. Our guests are Carl Caldwell and David Teal from WILL-TV. We're taking your questions for these managers of WILL Television. We have a listener waiting in Champaign and probably time for at least one more if you'd like to join us. 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Listener in Champaign, next, line number two. Good morning. Yes. You're on Focus 580.
I would like to second the opinion of the caller about the McLaughlin Show. That's available many places, and he really is truly obnoxious. And I have wondered if you put it on so that you couldn't be accused of not presenting the conservative side of things. But anyway, as far as I can so he can go, and I've been a contributor for 15 years. The second thing is that I would like to see go is Last of the Summer Wine. That somehow comes across to me as insipid. I do want to congratulate you on the name of a program I can't remember. It's on radio, and it's a discussion of religious affairs conducted by the pastor or the director of the University YMCA. I think that's splendid. It's local. It's interesting to get that cross-section of opinion and information, and really fine. And like the other caller, it's good to hear local things, and I thank you very much. I always contribute. I hate some of the stuff, but I love the other.
Well, you know, it's one of the great things about this format is that we get that direct feedback, perhaps, yeah. And we appreciate your longtime support of the stations. I don't know whether you've corresponded with us before about your feelings concerning some of the programs we air.
I talked with Dave Simeone
a
couple of times.
Right? Well, it's great of you to call to let us know your thoughts because I can, David, I know you'll agree, and Jack, you too, on the radio side. We appreciate any feedback, positive or negative, because we love to know what you're thinking.
I'd like to quickly respond to a couple of those points because I see we have a couple other lines. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, I spoke before about the McLaughlin Group. You know, I think it in a sense, it does provide a conservative viewpoint to the station. Some people accuse us of being too liberal, but I'll tell you, just as many people accuse us of being too conservative, and it really just depends on what you're watching and what infuriates you, and I get it from both ways, and I know that we can't be both, so I think we're probably hitting a pretty good balance. As far as Last of the Summer Wine goes, I mean, you know, this is why we provide a variety of British comedies. You're not going to like them all. And there are other people who call in and say, and I have heard, you know, from people say, this is my favorite show. So you just never know what's going to hit with a certain person. And, you know, tastes vary. And that's why we offer 8 different Britcoms a week. I'm glad that you find a lot that you like, and hopefully more that you like than you don't. So.
And thank you for that call.
Yeah. And thanks for the compliment for Keeping the Faith, which is the radio show you mentioned with Steve Shoemaker, 5 p.m. on Sundays on AM 580. But that's not a plug either. Our lines are suddenly filling up, and I want to try and include as many people as we possibly can. We'll go next to a listener on a car phone in Neoga on line number one. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I didn't call because of this, but Last of the Summer Wine is my favorite.
See?
Good for you, Nioga.
I was wondering, your problem is that you have to be watching your station to know what's going to be on. But what, couldn't you tag along or approach some of your corporate sponsors, somebody like Radio Shack that does a lot of advertising and sends out flyers, and then they could have an advertisement for you instead of giving you so much money?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes that's what happens with individual programs, and not with the entire schedule, but yeah, I mean, we try to pursue those opportunities where we can.
Sorry to cut the caller off, but I want to try to include at least one more caller. We'll go next to another car phone listener in Champaign on line number 4. Good morning.
Yeah, thank you. I'd like to express my support for the McLaughlin Group because he does make people think. You can disagree with him, you can agree with him, you can get mad at him, but he does make you think. Second of all, I really appreciate the British comedies because I guess I kind of appreciate them more than I do what I see on regular TV. And the other thing is, I would like to see a documentary put together, or maybe there is one, on some of the architectural structures at the University of Illinois and their history and what they've been used for. Thank you. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Sounds very interesting.
Yeah,
actually.
It does. Henry Sujeski and I, several years ago, did a piece, a video piece for the University of Illinois that highlighted the growth and development of all three U of I campuses. Incredibly interesting stories on this campus, of course, the Urbana-Champaign campus, but also the construction of the old Circle campus in Chicago back in the mid-60s and the development of UIS. But that would be an excellent program from a local standpoint. Thank you for that call.
Well, you know, you mentioned a day in our hometown, which we didn't really talk probably as much as we should have about. But really, stories is what we're talking about. And yeah. isn't it sort of one of our prime functions in serving this particular local area to really tell the stories
and
from here?
Yes, Jack, I agree with you, and I didn't do a very good job. For those listeners who have never seen one of these programs, I probably didn't do a very good job in laying the foundation, the groundwork to describe this, but you're right. There's stories that are selected by people that live in Decatur or Bloomington Normal. They actually go out and do the videotaping. Most of the stories make the air, if not all of the stories. But what's good about it too, Jack, is the fact that they're positive stories. They're stories about good things people are doing. And as you know, in the news business, we tend to focus, I think, a little bit too heavily on bad news. These Bloomington, Normal, Decatur, and of course this coming December, Danville, hometown programs focus on the positive aspects of what's going on, the things going on in a particular community. And that, is, I think, is a good thing.
Are there other such productions envisioned for the future? A Day in Our Hometown, perhaps some other besides Bloomington Normal and Decatur?
We started with Decatur last December. In June, we aired Bloomington Normal. This December, Danville. And yes, we do intend to continue to produce these programs. Again, not so much as an effort to raise dollars, but to reach out to communities,
sure,
to let people who perhaps have never watched WILL-TV to connect with it in a very real way, and perhaps we'll have longtime viewers. That's what we'd like to see.
And we should give due credit to Kimberly Cronick, who's
that's
taken
right.
the role
right.
in
Kimberly's
this.
Done a great job.
Absolutely. Well, sorry to say we're out of time, and we have a listener that we weren't able to include in our conversation, but let's do this again, shall we?
Yeah.
Absolutely, Jack. Thank you for
I'm
the opportunity.
Game anytime.
Okay. Call Caldwell, station manager at WILL-TV, and David Teal, the program director at WILL-TV, have been our guests during this hour.